I know you're going to dig this.
Now, Walk Off Sports Talk with Cole Ambrose and Dustin Eusebio.
Hello and welcome back to Walk Off Sports Talk with myself, Dustin Eusebio, and my highly talented co-host, Cole Ambrose. How's your week going, man?
It's going a lot better than last week. I'm feeling 100% better than I was last time we recorded the show. So I know you're a little under the weather, but...
Yeah, I'm a little bit. I never got too bad, but this amazing weekend of football definitely made the cold feel a little better. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
When you feel cold and a little chilly, and then you're watching games played in snowstorms, and a snowstorm is a polite way of saying it. I mean, that game in Philadelphia was absolutely crazy. I remember seeing a picture of Calvin Johnson when he got tackled, and the snow is just all over his face. Mess. I mean, that has to be absolutely miserable.
Didn't he have to actually come out of the game for a couple plays to remove the snow from his face? Because they took off his visor, obviously, before the game started so that, you know, he didn't have to be a human windshield wiper and wipe that thing off every other play. But I heard he came out for like a couple plays just to, you know, remove the face from or the snow from his face. That's absurd to me.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy, man. And I know the argument's going to be made that, you know, especially in a playoff race, you know, it's hard because if the Lions are in a dome, a lot of people would have picked the Lions to win that game with that explosive offense and that really, you know, powerful, dominant defensive line that can rush the quarterback. But part of football is being able to play in the elements. And the point I'm trying to get to is obviously the Super Bowl in New York. And I know a lot of people are against that. You know, as a football fan, I like the idea. I like watching those games. You know, playing football in California, it would have been fun to play a snow game. Maybe if I actually played it, I would have enjoyed it. But thinking about it, I think it would have been, you know, really enjoyable. And you look at it and people are going to say, well, you know, maybe the teams aren't going to be able to do what they do best. You know, you look at the Broncos team, a team that airs it out a lot. Maybe they're not going to be as formidable, you know, playing in the snow, or a team like the Lions. But as I mentioned, football, you know, you have to play within the elements. And people are going to make the argument, well, it's not going to be as fun to watch. This week, there were the most touchdown scores ever in the history of the NFL. Through Thursday and Monday, we had over 101 touchdowns scored. The previous record was 90. So obviously, you know, points are still going to be scored.
Yeah, and I think many would argue after watching the Philadelphia game, because a lot of people tuned in on a local radio station back in Philadelphia, and I heard this on SportsCenter, and many locals were saying that this was the most fun they'd had at a football game or watching a football game, to see these guys be able to, you know, go through these elements and still be successful. I mean, LeSean McCoy, I was watching the replay on NFL Network, and he made some absolutely just jaw-dropping cuts in this type of weather. And I have to say, as a fan, this was so much fun to be a part of, and that's what football is all about to me. And we got to see a little bit of that this weekend in a couple games that you're not, you know, used to seeing, because they could easily avoid this by putting up a dome in these states and cities where you're accustomed to getting a lot of snow. You know, you obviously have Pittsburgh, you have Philadelphia, and some teams do have the domes. You have Indianapolis and Minnesota, and so where it would snow, and I would like to see teams refrain from using a dome, but you understand it. But it was fun to watch. It really was.
Yeah, it was really good. And then the Baltimore game, you know, on paper, I don't think anyone would have thought, I want to watch Minnesota and Baltimore play, because Minnesota is arguably one of the worst teams in the NFL. And to have five touchdowns scored in the last 2 minutes, that game was really fun to watch. Luckily, the Ravens pulled it out, and maybe Joe Flacco showed, hey, I'm worth that money, you know, that throw at the end of the game.
Yeah, he looked like the franchise quarterback they were hoping he'd become, and paying him that kind of money. And it was – I never really backed Joe Flacco in the sense that he was an elite quarterback, but I thought he was at least formidable enough to be considered a top 15 quarterback. And he's proven that this year, because he's got no weapons. He really doesn't. Torrey Smith is a nice piece, but he doesn't have a true number one receiver there. Ray Rice hasn't had the season that I know you hoped for.
Yeah, you pick him. A guy number fourth, sixth overall in your fantasy football league. You expect for him to do a little better. And if it wasn't for Trent Richardson having a horrible year, I think Ray Rice would have been the fantasy dud of the year.
Yeah, so yeah, it was a great game to watch, and we need more like that. And that's what December is all about in football.
Yeah, so in today's show, we got a lot of topics to cover. We're going to talk about the NFL. We're going to both tell you, you know, our top 10 teams in the league. We're going to talk about the disaster that's happening in Washington. We're going to get into some college football, talk about the Heisman Trophy ceremony that's coming up this weekend, who ESPN and everyone is picking to win, but who we actually think should possibly win that award. We're also going to talk about the hottest team in basketball, and it's not the Pistons in Indiana. But first, we're going to start off with our opening vent session, something we introduced a few weeks ago. And my vent goes out to the Washington Redskins. Last year, Washington won the division. You know, I think it was the first time in 10 years. There are signs, there was T-shirts made, people were getting tattoos of this RG3 character. He was the face of the franchise. He was the savior of Washington, D.C. It wasn't Obama. It was RG3. He was a savior. He was going to change D.C. for many years to come. And right now, Washington is the worst team in the NFL. Maybe not on paper, maybe not talent-wise, but they are playing absolutely horrific football. I tried to tune in and watch the Chiefs game against the Redskins. You know, I thought it'd be a little entertaining. I thought we might see the old RG3, some flashes. The Chiefs' defense have been anemic the last 3 weeks, to say it. They've been horrible, and that was the worst football game I have seen in probably the last 5 years. RG3 has absolutely no idea what he's doing, and I have to give you credit, because coming out of the draft, you said this guy's going to be out of the league in 5 years, and I said, wait a second. You know, I don't think he's going to be Andrew Luck, but I think he's a guy who can be a solid starter. But that franchise is in such a horrible position. They give 3 first-round draft picks for a guy. They don't know what they're going to do with their head coach. They shut a guy down for the year. And you go into next season, and you're a Washington Redskins fan, and you go, wow, what is our future? Where do we go for here? And if you're a Redskins fan, I'm sorry for you guys, because it is not pretty.
Just to touch on that real quick before I get into my vent. You know, and a lot of people may have thought that I was just making it personal about RG3 because I am a Cowboys fan and that I hate the Redskins, obviously, them being huge rivals. But I've watched film on him in college, and it's not just RG3. There's a lot of quarterbacks that have played in the spread and had a lot of success in college that I've watched. A guy like Landry Jones, Graham Harrell at Texas Tech, these types of players who fit their systems in college, and they don't translate. And so when I was watching RG3's film when he was coming out, there was no doubt that he was electric athletically. We knew that. He's got sprinter speed, and he had a great arm. He was very accurate. But I wasn't sold on his ability to dissect a defense and read and go through his progressions. And to me, that is the number one thing I look at before anything else, and then you get into the intangibles. But I just was not sold on this kid, and I made a huge prediction that he'd be out of the league in 5 years, and it's kind of looking, it's going down that path. I'm not sure if that's going to totally hold up to be true, but he made a pass that got intercepted on a slant pattern, and I played quarterback in high school at not a high level. And I even know not to make that throw. I mean, that's as simple as a read as it gets. And the linebacker is drifting over to in your receiver's path, and you should see that. You're looking right at the receiver. It's a 3-step drop. You're looking quick. If it's not there, you go to the next receiver. You check down. Because on a 3-step drop, things happen so fast, and you got to make that quick decision. And you can see a linebacker's move in your path. So I don't know where he was looking to make that, you know, make that throw, but I'm going to get into my vent, and it's sticking in the NFL. And my issue right now is hits to the knees. And this has been a huge problem this season. And I understand why, because they've essentially changed the game from hits above the neck, you know, helmet to helmet hits, to below the waist and into the knees. And so there was a play this weekend that ended Rob Gronkowski's season. And I know you're obviously upset about that because you're a Patriots fan, but it's getting out of control. The amount of torn ACLs or knee injuries this season compared to last is already almost double. We still have 3 games left. And it's getting to the point where do we draw the line? Because as a football player, I know I would rather risk getting a concussion, because not every helmet-to-helmet hit is lethal. Not every hit up above the neck is going to be helmet-to-helmet. You could have shoulder-to-helmet.
And not every concussion necessarily leads to dementia and memory loss and all the side effects that have happened.
Exactly. And I would like to see the NFL look into it in more depth to see if these guys like Junior Seau and others had prior brain issues or mental issues. And because guys like Troy Aikman, who had 8 concussions and his career ended, he's broadcasting now. He's doing a great job. Nothing seems to be phasing him. So, and I understand the risk increase in helmet-to-helmet hits. I get that. And I know they're trying to protect the players, but I don't know. I got to ask you, Dust, because it's starting to get under my skin. You know, would you rather risk getting a concussion, or would you be okay with players going after your knees, which would then lead to you having almost a guarantee that you're going to have trouble walking later in your life, getting out of bed, you're going to be in a wheelchair. I mean, what would you rather give up? I'm just curious to ask you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't deal with memory loss. I don't deal with dementia. And so I think, you know, the head injuries and the targeting of the heads, I think there's a way where you can, you know, if you're the NFL, you can have direct targeting penalties and you can not have every touch of the helmet be a penalty. Maybe if you're leaping and stuff, because as you were alluding to, yes, a concussion can lead to memory loss. It can lead to brain damage.
Oh, absolutely.
90% of people who tear their ACL or tear their Achilles, they're going to have trouble walking when they're 30, not when they're 80. They don't lose their, you know, you might lose your memory in your 60s or 70s, but a lot of people lose their memory in their 60s and 70s. A lot of people can't walk or continue to work out in their 30s. They don't have hip displacement surgery, and they don't have to repeatedly get knee replacements and ankle replacements and all these things because of injuries that happened because the NFL was trying to prevent concussions. I understand why they're doing it because of the lawsuit, but I think they're really going to have to look at a way to change this rule because it's getting absurd. I mean, even T.J. Ward, the safety of the Browns, you know, he said, you know, I'm a guy who dealt with injuries in high school. In college, you know, he had 2 major injuries in college at Oregon. He's like, I hate doing it, but I knew if I went high, I was going to get fine. Gronk's a big guy, and so I hit him low, and I feel horrible that I ended the season, but players are having to make that decision that they have to hit low to save their pocketbooks, and it's horrible to see it because we're seeing great players in the NFL miss a lot of times, and it's really changing the outcomes of games and seasons for a lot of teams.
Yeah, but I'm looking at this hit that T.J. Ward delivered on Gronkowski because there was no, in my opinion, no reason for this hit because there was a DB right on Gronk. There was no reason to hit Gronk low. Gronk was going to go down here regardless, and that's my issue with the hit, and it was way low, like unintentionally low, and unnecessarily low, and I don't blame T.J. Ward because he would have gotten fined had he gone up high to Gronk. This is the NFL's issue. I'm not blaming TJ Ward. This is the NFL's issue. You need to make this essentially like baseball strike zone. It needs to be from right above the knees to about the numbers. And that's where you can hit guys because this is getting out of control. My cousin who broke his leg, his tibia in high school from football still has pain in his leg. And that's just a break. I mean, he's got metal rods in his leg, and he got honorably discharged from the Marine Corps because of that. So imagine a guy like...
I just feel, though, if you have that small of a window, it's going to make it... It's already almost impossible to play defense, but if you can only hit from the thigh pad of the numbers, when people hurdle, you can't hit them when they're in the air, you know, when people slider... I mean, I just feel like...
Yeah, but couldn't
it's
I
such a small window.
But though, couldn't I argue that below the knees is an even smaller window? Because to me, if I'm a DB and I'm seeing a player like Gronk go across the middle, to me, I think from right above the knees to below the numbers is a lot easier to target than right at the knees. So I feel like I get what you're saying, and I agree with you in a sense that to even have a window is ridiculous. To me, to have a window, I understand helmet to helmet needs to be out, but if you go shoulder pad down, which we've seen several times, to me, that's what makes me mad. When I see players get flagged for that, that's when I start to have an issue. If it's helmet to helmet, malicious, intent, then that's where I'm like, okay, draw the line. But when your shoulder pad hits a guy, like I saw Jason Witten this weekend when I was watching the Cowboys game, sorry, on Monday, there was a helmet to helmet hit when he scored a touchdown, no flag. So that's, I get what you're saying about the window, and I agree in a sense because you shouldn't have to draw a window, and that is a small window to get after. But going after the knees, to me, is an even smaller window to target.
I just feel if it's, you know, from the shoulder pads down to the ankles, there's a fluent area you can choose through.
Right.
Whereas
right.
it's just like this part of the midsection of their body, I feel like it's going to be really, really hard with people changing directions. Because if you're changing directions and say you juke someone out, you can maybe dive and try to just grab their ankles and wrap them up, but you can't actually reach to their midsection. So I just feel like...
Well, I mean, I'm just talking solely based on a play where, like a similar one to Gronk's, where a player's going across the middle and you're going to launch yourself. That's the window I'm talking about. If you have a player that jukes you out, you can grab their knees or ankles because
it'd just be a hard rule to create, though, in a sense where if they're juking you, you can grab their ankles, but then if not, like it'd have to be a fluent rule no matter where, because you can't say if someone's coming across the middle, you can only hit upper body, but if it's on the sideline or they're making a move with the ball, then you could hit anywhere. You see where I'm coming from?
No, I get what you're saying. That would be something the NFL would have to discuss, but all in all, I just think that the whole going low deal is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it's horrible. I don't know how it can be solved because the NFL is so anti-hitting high. I'm just not sure how you can solve the issue without drastically changing the game.
Put on flags.
That may happen in a few years. Or it could be like the Jetsons, you know, where you make these robots and you control them kind of thing. Like a real-life virtual Madden.
Did you ever play the... It was like a magnetic board, and you would turn it on, and you would set up the players. It was like a little football field. You would set up the players, and you would turn it on, and they would just kind of it would shake, and then so that vibration would cause these pieces to move, and they were football. Oh, you never played this? Yeah, it's interesting, and I feel like that might be how the NFL.
I mean, I know Amazon has droids, so you know. What
oh,
I mean?
The droids, yeah.
So you never know what could happen in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, crazy. And it's funny because to think that it's such a popular sport and baseball is looked at as such a boring sport, you know? But if that became the case in the NFL, don't you think people would start watching baseball? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. It definitely changed the landscape.
Crazy point.
So thanks for tuning into Walk Off Sports Talk with myself, Dustin Eusebio, and my co-host, Cole Ambrose. So there was a lot of news that happened in sports this week. Last week, we briefly talked about Robinson Cano. And if he would side with Seattle and take that money, or if he would return to the Yankees, the team that looks to be, you know, a more reputable team going forward. But it's hard, you know, to tell a guy to turn down $240 million. If I'm sitting in that position, I'm not sure what I would do. But, you know, that's something that happened last week. We speculated it may happen. What's your first opinion on the deal? Do you think it was good for Cano or?
Well, I think $240 is good for anybody. You know, I don't blame him for making the move because that's what his total goal was, obviously, was to get paid. He said before the offseason even started that he wanted $300 million from the Yankees. And so you knew that was his goal right off the bat. He achieved that, not in the market I think he necessarily wanted it to be in, because you touched on this last show about Seattle's inability to provide a market for him to
market his brand.
So from that aspect, if he's looking at that, it's a bad move. But other than that, I mean, they're not going to compete, in my opinion. They're not. Seattle, Robinson Cano, and so many people have touched on this, so many analysts on ESPN, second basemen aren't going to make you contenders. They're not going to win you baseball games, you know. And we've talked about this on the show, how important pitching is, and they don't have pitching. So Seattle tries... It was a desperate attempt to
appease a fan base.
To increase the fan base, because I heard a statistic that it's dropped from, I believe it was 3.3 10 years ago, and in obviously the last decade, it's dropped to about 1.3 their attendance. So, you know, to me, it was just a desperate move to show the fans, hey, we're not giving up on this team. We're trying our best to compete, but it's a tough division. A lot of people could argue that, but you got teams like the Angels, the Rangers, and then obviously the A's in Seattle improving, obviously, but I just don't see them making a playoff run. So from that regard, if he wanted to try to get another ring, terrible move, obviously. So, but I don't think he would have gotten a ring in New York anyway, but maybe down the line, because they got more money, they could have put some more pieces together and made a run. But, you know, you can't, like you said, you can't blame a guy for going after $240 million, but it's Seattle. So good luck, Robinson. I mean, that's all I really can say.
Yeah, and keeping it on the, you know, the topic of pitching, Roy Halladay retired last weekend. Phenomenal pitcher. You know, great for the Blue Jays for a dozen or so years, and then he obviously went to Philadelphia and had a nice little run there. You know, it was hard to watch the last few seasons to see the injuries, you know, creep up, because you hate seeing players that are dominant for so long and they can't finish the way they started their glorious career. Kind of like Brett Favre. You know, he should have retired in Green Bay. And then he made a run on the Vikings, and he looked good. And then the Jets, and it's like, well, how do we measure his legacy? Luckily, you know, it wasn't that extreme for Roy Halladay, but it was hard seeing, you know, the injuries he went through last year. But he's definitely a class guy. In your mind, where does he go down with all the great pitchers, you know, of all time?
Well, the interesting thing about Roy Halladay is he, in the beginning of his career, was having major issues, and then went back down to the minors and worked with a pitching coach and really fine-tuned his tools, his mechanics, and his pitches, and came back up to the bigs and pretty much had one of the most dominant two-seam fastballs in baseball. I mean, it's got unbelievable movement on it, and he was unhittable for so long. But as far as where he ranks, I think he has a chance to be a Hall of Famer. I don't know about a first-ballot Hall of Famer, but he was a very dominant pitcher in his prime, and it's going to be interesting to see where he'll go, but I'd say at least, you know, he's got to be up there in the top, you know, 30 best pitchers of all time. So I'd have to look more in depth as far as starting to compare statistics, you know, wins, ERA, and certain stuff like that to determine where he would exactly fall is among, you know, the top 30.
Yeah, so, you know, basketball news. The Kings, you know, we talked about them a few weeks ago. They made a big trade for former number two overall pick, Derek Williams. And then over the weekend, they made a trade with the Raptors for Rudy Gay, the swingman. I'm not sure if this says more about the Kings trying to make moves or if this is more of a knock on Rudy Gay. It's his second team in 2 years. He's not looked like, you know, I don't think he's a locker room guy, but he's not looked upon as, you know, necessarily a franchise player like Toronto once thought he was when they made the move. Do you like the move for the Kings? Do you think they're a team that's moving in the right direction?
We talked about this before the show. If Rudy Gay was more of a complete player, you'd made the comparison that he's a poor man's Carmelo Anthony. If he was a little bit more complete, I would say this is a great move. But to me, this is, you know, a lot like what Seattle did in baseball. It's kind of a desperate move to me because, you know, they got the new ownership. They're staying in Sacramento. And, you know, they draft Ben McLemore this year in the first round. I think Rudy Gay is an okay piece. He's not a franchise player, but moving forward, I don't think he makes them a playoff contender. I don't think he really gives them that great of a boost. I don't know why Toronto made the move in the first place, but kind of feel bad for Rudy because he left, you know, obviously leaves Memphis and then he goes to Toronto, who's terrible, and then now he goes to Sacramento, who's terrible. I believe they have 4 wins right now. So, you know, what do you think moving forward? Do you think this was really a move that the Kings were looking at it as, hey, if we get this guy, you know, we might be able to make a run here in the West?
I really like the move for the future. Sorry. I think Rudy Gay has 3 years left on his contract, and you look at, you know, the group they're putting together. DeMarcus Cousins, who I think pound for pound is the most physically dominating center since Shaquille O'Neal. Obviously, he doesn't have his head on straight all the time, but I think his full potential is short of Shaq, but that type of a dominant player. They traded for Derek Williams from the Timberwolves, who I think he's an above-average starting forward. I think he's a good player. And you look at Rudy Gay, and they drafted Ben McLemore in this draft. And as we mentioned, they're not playing well. So they're going to get another high draft pick. And you look at maybe the guard Marcus Smart, the point guard from Oklahoma State. I think it's a good move moving forward because I don't think Rudy Gay adds a dozen or so wins to your win column this year, but I think he's a solid piece on a young team.
He's a very good perimeter shooter. And yeah, I think that could bode well for them if they are able to put together a playoff run as a guy who can step back. You have a big in DeMarcus Cousins like you touched on, and that could be a very, very nice piece move.
And I think he could be a good veteran leader on a team that has a lot of young talent, and obviously he went to the playoffs with Memphis. He's been on a winning team and a winning culture, and I think he could bring that positive attitude to a club that really lacks leadership and character.
I like that point, actually. That's always key in an NBA locker room. You want to have some sort of veteran leadership. You saw that last year with the Heat when they went and got Ray Allen and Birdman, and the year before they got Battier. So you definitely need that type of leadership if you want to move forward.
So we're going to do what we do every time at this show. This is what Dustin and Cole know and what we thought we knew.
Now, what Dustin and Cole know. And what they thought they knew.
So this is kind of a group one for this week. We were running really late on last week's show, so we didn't make our bold predictions at the end for games necessarily, but we hit on some key points, and I think they came into fruition. At least one of them did this week, and that was the Bears sticking with quarterback Josh McCown. What did you think about the move and how he played?
This has been a big debate this week on all sports shows. He's obviously played well. I mean, he had 5 total TDs, 4 passing, 1 rushing in the game against my Cowboys, but he seems to fit this system as good as any quarterback fits any system. And Mark Trestman has always been a quarterback guru. He's been looked upon as a guy who is essentially a quarterback savior. And I still think it's Jay Cutler's team. As far as when he comes back, because they always say in the NFL, you never lose your job because of an injury. Although,
unless you're Alex Smith.
Unless you're Alex Smith. So, he should be given the job back. But in my honest opinion, the way they're playing right now, I would stay with McCown. I wouldn't want, like we talked about last week, I don't make a decision based on, I don't feel the pressure to make a decision because he's supposed to be my franchise quarterback. I'm supposed to pay him this offseason. I'm making a decision based on what's best for my team. And they haven't played as good as they have been the last month with Josh McCown under center all season. So if I'm Trestman, I stay with McCown. I know that's not what's going to happen, but he's played phenomenal. I mean, the guy, I understand Dallas's defense is not great, but in fact, they're atrocious.
Yeah, you're getting a little soft on me there for a second.
Yeah, but he still, to me, he seems like he has total command. And the way that he's making audibles and checks at the line, and it doesn't hurt to have guys like Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall, but to me, right now, he's as playing as good as any quarterback right now. So I'm not going to make a decision because Jay Cutler is Jay Cutler.
Yeah, and then obviously we were wrong. We picked Missouri to upset Auburn for the SEC championship. That was a crazy game. Literally, Dallas suited up for defense for both teams.
They had one job. They had one job in Missouri, and
that was to stop the run. And that was to 75 plays.
Yeah, and I do want to rant for a second because Trey Mason is a Heisman finalist who I honestly didn't have a clue about who he was about 2 weeks ago. And all of a sudden, he's a Heisman finalist because he rushes for over 300 yards against Missouri. So shame on you, Missouri, for putting him in the Heisman race because, obviously he's not going to win, but you had one job and you didn't do it. And I wanted to see Bama FSU and you let me down. So you're scrub material for me.
That wraps up what Dustin and Cole knew and what we thought we knew. Thanks again for listening to Walk Off Sports Talk. So, in the business world, we see the same companies dominate year after year after year. Obviously, Walmart's been a dominant, company for the past 10 years. Apple, companies like BP, we see them dominate their industries. But every once in a while, we see a small company challenge, maybe for a quarter or for a year. And I feel like that's kind of happening, this year in the NFL. Obviously, the Patriots are a team that's very good every year. The Broncos the past 2 years. You have the 49ers and the Seahawks looking like they're going to become a stable franchise for this foreseeable future. But then there's teams like Carolina, Cincinnati, the Eagles, who I don't think anyone expected to be in the playoff hunt. We're going to talk about our top 10 teams in the league, and some of them may surprise you guys a little bit. Cole, do you want to start with your top 10 for me?
Yeah, we can definitely start with my top 10 right now. I definitely wanted to go away from the mainstream narrative here because a lot of people at the very top of their list had the same team, and I wanted to shy away from that if there was any possibility of me doing that, because
are you saying the Seahawks aren't number one?
The Seahawks are not number one, and that's why I wanted to start with that for a second, because and don't freak out. They're in the top 10. Don't worry about that. But I'm gonna have to, in my opinion, I'm gonna have to go with Denver to be the number one team now with Gronk's injury. Last week I was putting the Patriots number one because I thought with Belichick and Brady, what they've been doing all season long with the injuries they've had, they've beaten the Saints, they beat the Broncos, they were just trucking, and losing Gronk to me was just that last straw. I mean, losing Jerod Mayo, Aqib Talib's been hurt this year, losing your boy Vince Wilfork, it's been tough. So they're not out of it. I think they'll make a run to the AFC Championship to play the Broncos. But as far as my top 10, I'm going to start with the Denver Broncos. And then second, I am going to go with the Seattle Seahawks, because as far as home teams, they're as good as it gets. But on the road, you saw them lose to the 49ers this past weekend. They're not an average team, obviously, but they're not that dominant team that they are at home. So I put them number two. Number three, I got, everybody's going to freak out about this one. At number three, I got the New Orleans Saints. I think with Drew Brees in that offense, and their defense is playing pretty well right now, they are another team that at home are pretty much unbeatable. You saw them beat Carolina this week. But on the road, they're still a formidable team, still pretty dominant. But in the playoffs, we know everything's changing. So fourth, I'm going to put the Panthers. I know everybody's going to jump on the bandwagon with this one. So their defense, to me, is the best in the NFL. Cam, they had a trip up this weekend, and I called it. I said the Saints would take this one because at home they are unbeatable. But Carolina, to me, is a team that's going to fly under the radar when playoff time comes around. Their defense is unstoppable. Cam just needs to keep playing the game that he has played for the last 3 to 4 weeks. Got a good running game there. I like Carolina. I really, really like Carolina. At five, I got the Patriots. They were my number one last week, but with that Gronk injury, Tom's going to figure something out, and I know he will, but I got to drop him a little bit because, I mean, Kemba Tompkins is hurt. Dobson's been hurt. Amendola's been hurt. I mean, I just don't even know where the list ends for Tom, and he just keeps coming out every week fighting. But they're my number five. Number six, I'm going to put San Francisco. I wasn't high on them, but their offense in this week, what they did against Seattle, I know they were home, but they played pretty well. I love their defense, as they've been as dominant as the defenses the NFL has seen in the last couple of years. So I like them defensively with Crabtree coming back. I know I've knocked them, but it's still an upgrade over what they had. So I like them. And then seven. Oh, man. I don't like to say, but seven, I'm going to put the Colts there. A lot of people may disagree with me because as bad as they've been playing, but I love Andrew Luck, and I think this kid's an absolute star in this league. But moving forward, we'll have to see if they can somehow basically fight off the colds of, you know, losing Reggie Wayne and having a bad offensive line. Hopefully they can get a running game going, because if they don't, then they're pretty much done. But I'm hoping. I'm crossing my fingers, because I root Andrew Luck on more than anybody. So, and I back him up full force. Number eight, I got, I hate to say it, but I got the Lions at number eight. I really like what they're doing offensively. You can't judge them based off of this past weekend, like Dustin mentioned earlier in the show, because it was coming down viciously. And if it was in Detroit, or if it wasn't snowing, I think Detroit wins that game pretty handily, to be honest with you. So you can't judge it based off of that. But anytime you got a guy like Megatron and Stafford and stuff like that, they're going to win that division, in my opinion. So they're sitting strong at eight. At nine, I like the Bengals. And a lot of you may be scratching your head that they're not on this list any higher than they should be. But Andy Dalton, to me, I haven't still been convinced that he can totally lead this team to Super Bowl. They've got all the weapons that any quarterback could ever ask for. So I'm hoping they prove me wrong, because it would be nice to see Cincinnati, a team that hasn't had a lot of success in the playoffs, to make a run for the Super Bowl. But, you know, what are you going to do? And then at 10, this one I really, really, really don't like, but I'm putting the Eagles at 10. So I think they're right now playing as good as a football as any team in the NFL. That offense, to me, I'm not totally giving Chip Kelly all the credit, okay? But this is a very, very, very safe offense, in the sense that Chip Kelly does a great job avoiding mistakes and any type of turnovers. He really puts Nick Foles in a great position. I don't give Nick Foles all the credit. I give a lot of credit to Chip Kelly, because he's put him in a system where his reads are pretty simple, and he's got great playmakers around him. I mean, LeSean McCoy is arguably an MVP candidate this year, so they're sitting at 10 for me. Dustin, give me your 10.
My 10's, you know, pretty similar. I think most of the teams, I actually think we may have all the same teams in our top 10, to be honest, just a little different order. For me, I have Seattle at number one. Obviously, they lost to San Fran, but I think that was a game San Fran had to win.
If they did, absolutely.
If they had any gut, if they had any heart, if they had any
will to be a
contender or a team that's going to make a run in the playoffs, they had to win that game. And so I don't knock Seattle necessarily for that one. I think that's a game that I actually picked San Fran to win, and I thought they had to win that game. So I have Seattle at number one. Obviously, they're not as dominant on the road, but they're still a very good team. Your defense travels. I think Russell Wilson, as the season goes on and once the playoff starts, they're going to open it up a little more and give them a little more opportunity. And I think their offense is very balanced. I have the Broncos at number two. It's going to, you know, it definitely concerns me going down the stretch with the weather. You don't know how that's going to be, but I mean, they put up points. I mean, it is absurd. Obviously, Peyton has weapons all over the field, but their offense is so explosive. I don't know if there's a team that, if the weathers are good, can really stop them. So, you know, they're a team to me that I think they're going to be there, you know, throughout the playoffs. I have the Saints at number three. You know, they struggled in Seattle, but then they played, you know, Carolina, a team that was on a six-game winning streak, and completely humiliated them on national TV. So I have to have the Saints at number three. I have the Patriots at number four. I think the injury to Gronkowski was devastating. I think it was a huge injury that obviously, you know, cannot be replaced. But at the same time, the way that team had the fortitude to come back and win that game against Cleveland when they had no right winning, I think that shows the maturity and the heart and the knowledge that team has of the game of football and how to beat teams. And so they're a team I still need to see a few more weeks. I don't think they're going to be as bad as they were when they lost Gronk week 1-6, but there's definitely going to be a decline. I have Carolina at number five. You're not going to win. There's not many teams in the NFL that are going to win seven games in a row, not to mention in New Orleans. So I don't knock them for that. Like we mentioned last week, like you mentioned in your top 10, they have a phenomenal defense. Cam Newton's been playing really well. Their offensive line just didn't hold up in that game. They didn't give Cam a chance, but I still think going forward and in the playoffs, they're going to be a team to be reckoned with. Now, this team I have a little higher than you. I actually have the Detroit Lions at six. Besides Denver, I think they have the most explosive offense in football. When Reggie Bush is healthy, there's not anyone who can shut down Megatron. He is an absolute specimen, 6'5", runs a 4.3. You know, Stafford's been clicking a lot better this year. He looks a lot less mistake prone. And so I think they're a team that if they're playing their game, they can be anyone in the NFL. So I have them at six. At number seven, I have the 49ers. I think they're starting to get their mojo back. By that, I mean, I think they're starting to play hard-nosed defense and run the ball. You know, Colin Kaepernick went on a great run last season and towards the playoffs, but he's still, you know, an upgraded game manager for the Saints. Obviously, he can have those explosive plays with the run, but he still hasn't progressed as a pocket passer. And he has to, continue to learn how to read a defense. So I think getting back to the run for them was key. And I think they're a team, you know, that can be a very hard team to beat come playoff time because of the way they play football and their defense. I have Cincinnati at number eight. I am a little bit concerned with Andy Dalton, but they have a great 2-1 punch at running back with Bernard and the law firm himself, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. They run the ball extremely well. They have playmakers on the outside. And that defense, I think, is one of the most overlooked defenses in the NFL. But they're very, very talented, especially in their front seven. I have the Colts at 9. And that's being nice because we respect Andrew Luck. But they are playing absolutely horrible football. They have to get it right this week against Houston. If they lose that game, I don't know how they go in the locker room and shower and feel like men, because they're, you know, Houston's a horrible team, but the Colts are playing like a horrible team. Their offensive line is giving Andrew Luck no help. They're, you know, they caught the injury bug, but they definitely need to step it up and, you know, play better than they've been playing. And I have the Bears, you know, maybe it's because they played so well on Monday night, but that offense is so explosive. They have so many weapons at the tight end position, at running back, and the defense is playing a little better. They're not great. I know Dallas's offensive line has trouble, and they made Dallas very one-dimensional because they had the big lead, but I think the Bears' defense is playing better than it was, and I think they're a team that, you know, when they're clicking, they can beat almost anyone in the NFL. So that's my top 10. So to stick with the Patriots, you know, if the Patriots go on a run this year and say they win the Super Bowl, which it seems highly unlikely that that will happen, does this finally give Tom Brady the legitimate case to go down as the greatest quarterback? Because he, like we mentioned, you know, their defense is very injury ridden. They're missing Gronkowski. If he wins it this year, is he automatically considered the best quarterback to ever play?
I think regardless, and I said this before the season started, if he was able to rally this team and rally the troops to a playoff run and a deep playoff run, not just one and done, but to an AFC championship, potentially a berth in the Super Bowl, he had, in my opinion, he had to be looked at as the greatest of all time, because Joe Montana never once had a team this bad. And I'm talking defensively and offensively, losing Vince Wilfork and Gerard Mayo, which are the two cornerstones of that defense, from your D-line to your linebacking core, and a terrible, terrible secondary outside of Aqib Talib, who seems to be guarding everybody on the field. He has to, in my opinion. I don't know how you look past Brady in this regard, because, and take the emotion out of it, take you not liking Brady for some reason, which is the weirdest thing to me, why he's been looked at as kind of a villain in the NFL. This guy has never done anything illegal off the field. And on the field, he's been nothing but a class act. He's, you know, you can't be jealous because he's married to a supermodel. I mean, that can't be your excuse as to why he's not the greatest of all time. If they do win a Super Bowl, without a doubt, he's the greatest of all time. I don't even think there would even be a discussion or a debate that could happen if he did this, because he's got nobody, literally no one. I mean, seriously, people, think about the guy's weapons. If you know who they are, you know, come on the show and let us know, because outside of Rob Gronkowski and him going down, and I've talked about Kembrell Tompkins and Aaron Dobson, who else are we talking about? Because, I mean, no running game. Who's your running game? Steven Ridley? LeGarrette Blount? I mean, come on. This is not... I to me, when I look at this right now, Brady's the greatest in my opinion already. But if he wins it, it's done.
You know, switching it to a team that doesn't have the greatest quarterback of all time, a team that doesn't even know what they're doing with their quarterback from this point forward, and that's the Washington Redskins. The Redskins came out today and said they were going to shut down RG3 for the whole season. Previously, they said, we're going to let him continue to play to mature and learn the ring and learn, you know, the position better. But they took a completely different angle today, naming Kirk Cousins a starter. And here's a little soundbite from Kirk Cousins with his first talk to the media as the starting quarterback of the nation's capital.
Just need to get ready to go. Need to have a good week of preparation. Need to just continue doing what I've been doing and let things take care of themselves.
You know, obviously Kirk Cousins is a class act. He came out earlier, you know, saying that this is RG3's team and he's just filling in for the team as need be. But if you're the Redskins, I don't see what you're doing. If RG3 is your franchise quarterback and you're going to hire a coach in this offseason that fits his playmaking ability to the best of his ability, why is he not playing? I realize he's been hit a lot, but that's not just the offensive line's fault. That's because he's not making the right decisions, and he can't learn how to make the right decisions by being inactive on the sidelines. So to me, I don't see what the Redskins are doing. I feel like they're manipulating their fans to create this controversy, because if Kirk Cousins goes out and wins the last three games of the season, there's going to be a debate. There has to be one in Washington with how bad RG3 is playing. What do you believe is the main reason the Redskins are making this decision?
Well, everybody's been talking about Mike Shanahan and how he's been wanting to bench RG3, and you've seen he's come out in the media this week and said that, you know, Daniel Snyder doesn't care about any other position but RG3, that being the quarterback position, that he regretted not benching RG3 in that playoff game last year. So there's been a lot of speculation about Shanahan trying to basically get fired. And by making these types of decisions, he was hoping that Snyder would fire him because he would then get the $7 million left on his contract. Obviously, Snyder's not falling for that. There's only three games left in the season. They're 3-10. He's going to save that $7 million. So I agree with you. Is from a future standpoint, where does this benefit your franchise? The whole speculation about RG3 being injured, to me, is bogus. By this point in the season, you had a guy like Tom Brady and Carson Palmer, who Carson Palmer tore his in the playoffs, came back the next year. So I understand at the beginning of the season, you could talk about the rust, you could talk about this and that. But look, we got three games left in the season. That the excuse that he's not 100% is got to be thrown in the trash can. I've talked about that. So from a schematic standpoint, I don't understand it. If you want RG3 to be your quarterback, which you obviously do, you gave up three first-round picks for him, you need to play RG3. He's only, like you said, he's only going to get better from getting game time situations. You can't get that being on the sidelines. You can't get that in practice.
Yeah, and he was running scout team quarterback this week.
Oh, nice.
Impersonating Matt Ryan, which I think they're playing styles. I don't think Matt Ryan's ever ran a 40-yard dash in his career, so I'm not sure the job he did impersonating him. But you go from the franchise savior to a scout team quarterback in a week. That's crazy. I mean, that is absolutely crazy.
All this is going to do is turn Kirk Cousins into the next Matt Flynn. He's going to have, if he plays these next three games and he plays them well, he's going to get a contract from somebody for some absurd amount. Because that's how prevalent it is in the NFL to have to want a great quarterback. You, as a team, you're not going to compete without a great quarterback. And so teams like Jacksonville, teams like Minnesota may be gunning for Cousins if he comes out and plays very well like he did in his start last year against Cleveland. So I don't understand the move. I really don't. It makes absolutely no sense to me.
Yeah, well, staying in the NFC East, Jerry Jones, a complete financial mogul, and monetarily speaking, probably the best owner in the NFL. But when it comes to personnel, you know, maybe you should fire that Jerry Jones. But he came out this week, like he likes to do, speaking to the media, and he backed both his head coach, Jason Garrett.
He likes to speak in the media? I had no idea.
And his defensive coordinator, Monty Kiffin, who, to say shortly, you know, should be, his seat's getting pretty warm.
You, with the job that Jason has done, I know before the season you said, you know, this was not an Armageddon year for Garrett. Does he need to make the playoffs?
Well, it is not that for Jason, and I'm disappointed that we don't have a better record, but he has got us in position to win the division and got a team here that I firmly believe has the ability to be one of the better playing teams at the end, and we're positioned to get in the playoffs. We see logically how to get in the playoffs. We have that for all practical purposes in our control. Now that's a pretty good spot to be in.
He later goes on to say in the interview that Monty Kiffin is not on the hot seat, and he doesn't regret the signing of Monte Kiffin, which I find kind of funny because a few weeks ago he said the worst decision he ever made was firing Rob Ryan, his previous defensive coordinator. So I get he likes to talk. I realize it's part of the brand, the Cowboy brand, but what is he doing? Because we know what's going to happen at the end of the season. We know Monte Kiffin's going. Lane Kiffin already went. That was USC. We know Monte Kiffin's going.
Yeah.
It's not a great day in the Kiffin family
right
tree
now, yeah.
for football coaches. You know, I still think Garrett has a chance to save his job, but this isn't needed. You know, everyone knows this is a possibility. What is Jerry doing?
you touched on it, or actually Jerry touched on it, and my issue with Jerry Jones as a GM is this, simply this. He says, we have the opportunity to be one of the better playing teams at the end of the season. As a coach, as a player, as a fan, that's not what I want to hear. I don't want to see that. I don't want to hear we're one of the better playing teams. I want to strive to be the best team. And as far as a brand, we're one of the most, as far as revenue-wise, we're one of the most exclusive franchises in all of sports. So if you strive for that type of, you know, superiority is from a business aspect, strive for that on the field, because that's what we've lacked since 95. When was the last time we won a Super Bowl? So that's my issue, and that's why I think he's a terrible GM, because to me, he can't assess talent. He doesn't know how to put talent on a football field. He's great from a business standpoint, but when you're talking about hiring the right coaches, allowing that coach to coach, it doesn't work ever. I mean, we hired Big Tuna, Bill Parcells, in the early 2000s, and even he didn't have full control. And Bill Parcells was one of the greatest coaches of all time, and they couldn't even work. Jimmy Johnson, that couldn't work. Barry Switzer, that didn't work. And it's not Jason Garrett's fault. I've started to look into this, and I don't know what else Jason can do, because people don't understand that behind the scenes, Jerry Jones is pulling the strings. He really is. I mean, Garrett's almost essentially a puppet on the sidelines, and Jerry's just sitting there pulling the strings. And that's what bothers me, is that Garrett and Romo get all the flack, but you know, you have to understand, this defense is demolished, injury bug to the absolute maximum, and Jerry's more concerned about the brand, and he needs to stay out of the media, in my opinion. He really does, because the stuff he says to me is so ignorant. It really is. It just sounds so absurd, and I'm fed up, quite frankly, but you know, hey, Jerry Jones as a GM, he's got to go. He's got to go before Lane Kiffin's got to go. I'll tell you that much.
Thanks for tuning in to Walk Off Sports Talk with myself, Dustin Eusebio, and my co-host, Cole Ambrose. Earlier in the show, we talked about the NFL, and now we're going to get into some college football. So I'm sure, you know, in life, we've all heard, you know, the statement, it's better late than never. And this being the last year of the BCS system, they finally got it right, in my opinion. Auburn, Florida State. I wanted to see Alabama, but Auburn won, and they had the right to play this game. In your mind, did the BCS get it right? Was this their chance, you know, their final chance as a system to get it right? And in your opinion, did they do that?
They did. And I just want to piggyback off what you said. Auburn, in my opinion, isn't the better team than Alabama, but they did beat Alabama. And they won the SEC championship. So for that, they are deserving of being in the BCS championship, no doubt. There's no doubt in my mind. But you know, you look at a couple games like the Bama game or even the Georgia game, as far back as that, that was a fluke game, in my opinion. I mean, you give up a huge lead to a bad Georgia team. I mean, Georgia they've really been hampered by injuries this season. They don't have a good defense. And they're a Nick Marshall terrible decision away from not being in the national championship right now. And that ball, if you watch the game, was deflected by two Georgia DBs, and the Auburn receiver literally runs behind the DBs and catches this tip. So if that doesn't happen, they're not even in the SEC championship. Alabama doesn't miss that field goal, and the rest is history. But as far as BCS and what they needed to do, they did their job. So, but I'm just excited for the playoff next year. I really am.
Yeah, me too. I'm not sure if four is going to be enough, but I'm just glad that they're getting the system in motion.
You got to start somewhere.
You got to start somewhere. And it's way better than random numbers created by how many, you know, touchdowns you score. So earlier in the week, Danny Warfel gave the Heisman finalist list. And out of the six guys, I don't think there's very few of them that you would have picked to be on the list starting the year.
Tonight, it's my pleasure to announce the finalists for the 79th annual Heisman Memorial Trophy. Based on the balloting information provided by Deloitte & Touche, in alphabetical order, the Heisman Trophy Trust invites Jordan Lynch, Northern Illinois University, Johnny Manziel, Texas A&M University, Trey Mason, Auburn University, A.J. McCarron, University of Alabama, Andre Williams, Boston College, and Jameis Winston, Florida State University.
So I know we all expect Jordan Lynch to win the Heisman this year. Just kidding. Obviously, you know, ESPN has already proclaimed Jameis Winston the winner of the Heisman Trophy, claiming that he's had the best season any freshman has ever had, which I strongly disagree with. But in your opinion, I mean, he's probably going to win the award. It seems, you know, basically rocket science at this point that he's going to win the award. But in your opinion, is he the guy most deserving of the award?
No, he's not. And I think a lot of people would look at me with a raised eyebrow. But when I look at Jameis Winston and you compare the statistics between him and Menzel had 1,600 yards rushing. Okay. Winston's got about 300. And I understand they're different players. He's not that mobile quarterback that Menzel is. But Menzel, in my opinion, had the greatest freshman season, or one of the greatest college football seasons ever. And to almost throw for 4,000 yards and rush for 1,600 with, to me, not a very good team. And they had a piece in Luke Jokel, obviously, the offensive lineman. But one offensive lineman's not going to make an entire O-line. Their defense was good, a lot better than they are, obviously, this year. But Jameis Winston, to me, is in the perfect position. And a lot of people argued, well, EJ Manuel was in this position. How come he didn't do this? Well, we're seeing what EJ Manuel's doing in the NFL. I think
that would be absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Jameis Winston is an upgrade over EJ Manuel. That I do agree with. But to me, I've watched this kid's tape, and boy, does he lock on to receivers. And he's very fortunate to have one of the best offensive lines in the country, one of the best defenses in the country. He's got two running backs that are over 800 yards each, two receivers that are going to go in probably the top three rounds. Kelvin Benjamin's going to go probably first round. Green's going to go probably second to third. And a tight end that's probably going to go second to third round. So this guy's got nothing to complain about as far as weapons are concerned. So you have to give it to him because they're undefeated and going to the BCS National Championship. But that's my knock on the Heisman Trophy voting, is that this is not the best player on the best team. This is the best player in college football. And had Johnny Manziel not laid an absolute egg against LSU, to me, he wins this award.
Yeah, I think Jameis Winston is deserving because, like, as we mentioned, it normally goes with the best player on the best team. But I'm going to take it a step further as far as his freshman season compared to Johnny Football's. Johnny Football took an average team in the Big 12 conference that went to the SEC, and he made them dominant. A bad Big 12 team and made them dominant in the best,
in their first year in
the best conference in college football. And it was because of completely no one but himself. He was absolutely dominant. He led the SEC in rushing with 1,600 yards as a 5'11", 180-pound white quarterback.
Now the truth comes out, folks. He is not 6'1", 210 pounds.
I mean, the moves this guy makes on the football field are absolutely unbelievable. And to say their freshman seasons were even close, I think it's an absolute joke. I think Jameis Winston's deserving of the trophy this year, but you have to leave it at that. You can't. We get all these FSU supporters who have been hidden for the past 20 years and coming out because their team finally lit it with the hype and saying he's the greatest ever. He's not. He's a good quarterback, and it's going to be real interesting to see what happens next year when he loses all his talent to the NFL.
Yeah, and I know we've talked about that, and that's what I was going to touch on next, and I was going to give you credit for it because that is a very interesting topic and one that we will get into, obviously, next college football season. But I don't know if we're going to see the same Jameis Winston. I just don't believe we will. The talent that he's got around him right now is as good as it gets. And people have argued, oh, well, look at Tim Tebow. Look at the talent that he had around him.
The difference is Tebow played SEC defenses every week, and Jameis Winston plays in a basketball conference.
That, not to mention. But let's, outside of Aaron Hernandez, who, by the way, was a fourth-round pick, outside of Aaron Hernandez, please name a Florida wide receiver in the time that Tim Tebow was there.
My boy Percy Harvin.
Okay. But he was more of like a scat back. But that was receiver. It. But outside of that, you can't name anybody. Who was their running game? No one. So I would definitely argue that. So Tim Tebow was in his own right a very, very special player and in college football. And Johnny Manziel is that same type of player. He's special, something we probably won't see again. And he's made his team better. Dustin touched on it perfectly, absolutely perfectly, was that he took a very average Big 12 team and made them a dominant SEC team. And if you know anything about college football, that transition is black and white. It's a completely different conference, and you've seen it. That's why the SEC is in the national championship every year. Every year. So it seems like no other team. You got Ohio State losing this year. Oregon lost to Auburn in the national championship. Nobody can get there and beat at the SEC. So, and I don't see that changing. But, you know, Winston's going to win it. It is what it is. But this award needs to stop being voted based on, like, what I don't understand is, why can't you be a Heisman Trophy winner on an 8-4 team? Why? To me, why? I don't get that. Because a guy like Johnny Manziel, who's got a terrible defense, and outside of Mike Evans, who a lot of people think that is going to translate to a tight end in the NFL, but outside of that, who else does he have? So to me, I'm asking you, where along the way, you know, they never used to allow freshmen into the vote to win the Heisman. When are we going to allow guys that are on terrible teams? Not even terrible, but I mean, A&M's 8-4 and they're in the SEC. Why can't we allow a guy to be on a bad team and win the Heisman?
Not to mention that, but they played the big boys. You know, they weren't like Alabama, who shied away from the bigger teams. They played Alabama. They played LSU. They played Auburn. They played Georgia. They didn't play, you know, Louisiana Tech.
You're taking a shot at Alabama.
I'm taking a shot at Alabama. They played no one. They played no one this year.
Do you think if they had played?
I still think they're the best team in football, and they would have won if they played other teams. But it bugs me that it seems like every single year,
that's an interesting
their conference
point.
Is like the 11th weakest in the SEC.
I actually want to touch on that for a quick second, because we are getting short on time here. But do you think if they played a team like South Carolina, that would have helped them prepare for a team like Auburn? Because they didn't, outside of A&M, they didn't play anybody.
They really didn't. I mean, I think, you know, I don't think they were as dominant as they were the past, you know, 3 to 4 years. I still think they're the best team in college football, and I think if they played Auburn again, they win by 14 points because I think they're a way more complete team. They can actually pass the football, and their defense is really good. And, you know, Auburn's not going to return a kick for 108 yards if they play again. But I definitely think that's a good point. I think it's a point you have to look at. I'm not sure who exactly creates the schedule, but obviously playing a weaker opponent is going to benefit you, you would think, because your week in and week out schedule is going to be a little easier. But at the same time, that's what I'm worried about with Florida State in the national championship, because they played absolutely nobody. Don't tell me they played Duke for the ACC championship that had its first 10-win season in school history, a school that's been around for like 250 years. They played Duke. And then, you know, I was
super... Did I hear a fitty?
And, you know, I was really high on Clemson to start the season, and they're horrible. You know, I'm not big on South Carolina. I think we talked about it in the past because they have no quarterback. And South Carolina demolished them. I mean, it wasn't a football game.
The gloves are coming off right now.
And so, you know, it's just that's what's so hard. I mean, we heard all this stuff about Ohio State, and, you know, that they were right because Ohio State looked horrible against Michigan State. It showed how bad the Big Ten is. But the same argument could be made for the ACC. So I don't see how Florida State, yeah, they won by 37 points. But with the Cincinnati
on average,
Plangles,
they won by 42 this year. What does that tell you about their strength of schedule?
So, I mean, that's what confuses me. I feel like there's so many biases, and there's all this stuff pro Florida State, and I don't really get
it. So real quick, do you think we'll ever see a time where a Heisman Trophy winner can win it not being on an undefeated BCS berth?
Well, I think I think Robert Griffin won it.
Oh, yes. They did.
But that was a very rare occasion. Like you mentioned, it normally doesn't happen that year. He just happened to have, you know, phenomenal stats being that dual threat quarterback. But I think if it ever comes down to two guys who are considered to be equal in talent.
Didn't they only have like one or two losses?
Yeah, I don't know their exact record. I think they're 9-3, maybe 10-2. But I know they weren't undefeated, and they
no,
weren't.
No, they weren't. But so. It's I don't know what's going to happen down the road. That could be a topic that could be discussed later on, because Johnny Manziel, to me, is getting overshadowed this year.
You know, another guy that hasn't really been talked about much, and he was all over you know, the news on ESPN this during the summer was, you know, the pass rusher from South Carolina, Devonte Clowney, for his he had this hit on a, you know, 5'6" running back, and apparently when you're a 6'6" defensive end and you tackle a 5'6" running back, you're anointed the best player in college football. And he had a speeding incident where he decided to go 35 miles over the speed limit. There's a big debate between Javonte Clowney and Anthony Barr for the number one pick that presumably is going to be taken from the team in Texas, the Houston Texans.
Do you make that same mistake as drafting Mario Williams number one overall to go get a guy like Jadeveon Clowney?
Do you draft, say, Teddy Bridgewater and make the David Carr mistake?
Yeah, no, there's the toss-up, but right now you need to – that offensive line needs to get better. That D-line right now is still very good. Jadeveon Clowney, to me, that's a pick that wouldn't make sense to me for that specific team.
Especially with their scheme being a 3-4.
Right. So, I mean, first things first, Jadeveon Clowney, what are you doing? Speeding, first of all. To me, it seems like this guy's just falling apart this season. This says a lot about his character, who he is. Organizations and GMs need to look into this and figure out if this guy can be, if he's going to be a head case, or is he going to be a guy you can control and trust on and off the field. So I don't know. But as far as a football player, he, to me, is not worth a number one overall pick. I don't spend that on a defensive end. I spend number one overall picks on game changers. And most of the time right now in this league, that's a quarterback. So they have to draft a quarterback. They don't have to, because I think Case Keenum maybe gets another shot. But having the number one overall pick, do you pass on a guy like, you know, whoever you're high on, whether it be Bridgewater, whether it be Manziel? You know, so I don't know. We'll have to see what this draft holds, because Clowney should not be the number one pick.
Thanks for tuning in to Walk Off Sports Talk with myself, Dustin Eusebio, and my co-host, Cole Ambrose.
Accomplished a good amount last year. I think going into this year, if we keep showing the strides that we did offensively last year and make a marked improvement with our defense, we're going to be in the playoff hunt, and that's why you play the season.
At 5-2, the Blazers were already showing signs that they had matured as a group and had run off 3 consecutive victories when the Phoenix Suns paid a call.
So a team we've been meaning to brush on the past few weeks, we've just been so slammed with everything else, is the Portland Trailblazers. They're a team that has definitely had a lot of misfortune in their franchise history. They had Brandon Roy, who looked like a very promising 2-guard in the NBA. A lot of people were hyping him to be the next Kobe Bryant type of player. And obviously we all know that they passed on Kevin Durant and drafted Greg Oden, which is probably the worst draft mistake in the past 20 years of all sports, because Kevin Durant is looking like a top 10 player historically if his career plays out like we think it will. But they're playing really good basketball. But the NBA in a whole is really down. Obviously, the West is dominant every year, and they have a lot of good teams. But the East is a joke, like we mentioned last week. And though the West is strong, there's not that dominant team. The Warriors aren't great on the road.
They just lost to the Bobcats.
Exactly. Houston struggled. And besides San Antonio, who I know you're super high on, which, you know, you're smarter than me, obviously, because I've never, you know, given the Spurs the credit they deserve. But besides them, I don't know, you know, who's that dominant team in the West. With all that being said, do you think Portland's a team that is deserving to be considered, you know, a championship caliber team?
Well, you called it last year when the Trailblazers decided to take Damian Lillard in the first round. And you said, Cole, watch out for this kid. He's going to be one of the next great point guards in this league. And I'm like, okay. Never even heard of this guy. He's from Weber State. And I watched some tape on him, and I was like, wow, this kid's very athletic. He's got a very good jumper. He distributes the ball very well. And he wins Rookie of the Year last year. This year, looking like a potential MVP candidate. He's really got this team rolling right now. And them emerging as a contender in the West is a possibility this year. Absolutely. They still need one more piece, in my opinion. You have Damian Lillard and LaMarcus Aldridge. If they could have Brandon Roy right now, I mean, this team would be very scary. Very scary. So We'll see if they make any moves at the trade deadline, but I like this team. I really do. They're young, Nicholas Batum, and if you maybe you could get an outside perimeter shooter, another two guard, or another big, maybe this team really can make a run in the West, because Oklahoma City's not running away with anything right now. The Spurs aren't running away with anything right now. So it's who's going to be able to contend with Indiana or Miami.
Yeah, and the last thing I want to hit on in the NBA section is the return of the Black Mamba. Obviously, he came back Friday and had his season debut where he had a miraculous 9 points and 6 turnovers. But he came back, and I think Laker fans wanted to see that. Yes, I'm a Kobe hater.
You're taking some jabs tonight.
I'm studying for finals this week. I'm super stressed out, and so I felt like this show could be like an opening vent session throughout the show, and so I felt like no, but obviously he came back, and I think for Laker Nation, that's obviously exciting. This guy. As a warrior, it's unhuman, you know, to tear your Achilles
and
come
right.
back 8 weeks later. I mean,
he's not human. He goes to Germany, and now he's the Bicentennial Man. So
I wonder how he gets through airport security, because he has to be made out of complete titanium by now.
He's got something going. I mean, he probably pays him, like Von Miller did his I don't want to go there.
His PP test. But here's a sound that Laker fans were able to hear on Sunday that they've been waiting a long time to hear.
Roars as Kobe touches the basketball. It's into Sacre. Back to Kobe Bryant. Everybody waiting for that first shot to go up. Got 10 on the shot clock. Kobe. Pass underneath to Sacre to score! And Kobe.
I mean, we heard the sound, but could you believe his first shot attempt actually became a pass? Has Kobe Bryant changed? Is he going to develop into the ball mover to make this D'Antoni system work? Or do you think his comeback, how illustrious it seems now, do you think it's going to, in time, become a cancer for this team and they're not going to be as good as they were playing to start the year?
Do you still grow a mustache every November?
I always grow a mustache in November.
Okay, so I'm pretty sure Kobe Bryant's not going to change who he is as a basketball player. Kobe Bryant's always been the player that he is, and that's what's made him great. Now, can he distribute when he wants? Of course. Will he go on stretches where people are like, yeah, he might be changing? Of course. But he's still the Black Mamba. He's going to strike when he needs. And I'm actually very, very intrigued to see how he works in his second year with D'Antoni, because this team seemed to be clicking on all cylinders as good as it could with the talent they have. So I don't know how he's going to fit in this whole or mesh with this team right now. So he isn't going to change the way he does things. But another year under his belt, maybe him and D'Antoni get along a lot better and they turn this thing around, make a playoff run. Because like you said, the NBA's down. They, to me, aren't a playoff team, but in the West, they can maybe squeak in eighth seed. So that all kind of comes down to how Kobe is going to treat this season.
So we're getting short on time for the show, so we're going to wrap it up with our bold predictions. We're going to do it a little different this week. I'm going to ask Cole a few questions on a few games, and I'm just going to get his take on what he thinks the outcome of those games are going to be. So Houston and Portland play tomorrow night, a big marquee game for Portland to have a chance on a national stage to make a statement against a Houston team that myself proclaimed to be in the NBA Finals. Do you think Portland wins that game, or do you think Houston comes away with it?
I think Portland wins. I think they're playing great basketball right now. They're rolling. Their confidence is extremely high, and I don't think anybody's going to get in their way.
So I've been known to have bold predictions, and this one's pretty bold. I think the Jacksonville Jaguars continue their streak as
the hottest bad team in football.
The hottest team in the AFC in football, and win their fourth straight game against the Buffalo Bills. So I guess it's not super bold because they're playing the Bills, and the Bills are pretty bad. But I don't think anyone expected prior to the season to ever hear Jacksonville Jaguars and four-game winning streak in the same sentence. So that's my bold prediction.
I'm going to stay in the NFL, and I'm taking Cleveland at home to beat the Chicago Bears by 7 points. Cleveland almost beat New England at home last week. This team's playing hell-bent right now, and I like what they're doing. Jason Campbell, Josh Gordon seemingly can't be stopped. So I'm taking them over the Bears in a huge upset.
And my last bold prediction, I have the Colts playing a game this week against Houston. I think Houston's in a lot of turmoil. Obviously, they lost Gary Kubiak earlier in the week. Wade Phillips, he never was really a good head coach in Dallas. He's more of a coordinator type guy. I don't think they necessarily rally for him. I think they're a team that isn't necessarily a team right now. I think it's a lot of guys playing for themselves and for their next big contract. So I think the Colts put it all together this week. I think the Colts win at home by 14 points.
That's pretty bold. Did you hit bold on your keyboard?
I did. I typed it in all caps, actually.
Because that's very bold.
Even italicized it.
I'm going to take San Diego to beat Denver in Mile High.
I'm not sure if that's bold or just stupid, because I don't see it happening. But what are your reasons for that one?
My reason for this is San Diego has nothing else to play for this year, and they've played Denver extremely well in their previous meeting. McCoy, obviously being the former offensive coordinator for the Denver Broncos, in the second go-around, seeing them once this year, I think they might have what it takes to beat Denver. Denver coming off a long winning streak, and I really think they're going to overlook the Chargers, and they're going to go in and win this game.
So as a Patriot fan, I'll definitely have my fingers crossed for that, because that loss would have the Patriots have playoffs throughout the season at home. So I'll definitely
and therefore Peyton couldn't get out of the first round.
I think this would be the first time I'd ever vote for the Chargers in my whole career, so I'm definitely going to be voting for them San Diegoans this weekend. So that's going to wrap up this week's podcast for Walk Off Sports Talks. Thanks for tuning in every week. If you have any questions for us, tweet us at the show. My Twitter is Dustin_Wast, and Cole's is Cole_Wast. If you guys have any questions for the show, any topics you'd like us to discuss, we'd love to discuss them. We hope you guys have a great week, and hope you had a great Thanksgiving. For Cole and Dustin, we're out.